Welcome back to The Service Station, a podcast from Riverside County Department of Public Social Services. I'm Gene Kennedy.
And I'm Angela Nasso. We're talking today about a sobering topic that might be hard for sensitive ears, but we need to talk about it more often: child abuse and neglect. What we are doing here to help in Riverside County and what we can do to prevent it from happening.
You know, child abuse awareness and prevention is really everyone's responsibility. And community action can really result in positive change.
We're getting involved after something has happened, but what we want to prevent is future harm to that child.
You're hearing the voices of Crystal Shackelford and Jennifer Koffler telling us about a special partnership between our Children's Services Division and Riverside University Health System. Crystal is an admin services manager at the Riverside County Child Assessment Team, and Jennifer is a deputy director of the Children's Services Division at DPSS.
Before we dive into the conversation, let's set the stage. We are talking about a specialized team within our county's medical center in Moreno Valley that provides services for children and youth who have suffered from physical or sexual abuse or have experienced significant neglect.
This team is comprised of social workers, law enforcement, doctors, and other staff who help over 1,600 Riverside County children every year, kids from every age group who've suffered any kind of abuse. And the families of those children are also wrapped in services.
This is a place of hope and healing, a place where abuse stops and kids can be kids again. Crystal, Jennifer, welcome to the service station.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Crystal, we're starting with you. Tell us a little bit about the work you do with our Riverside County Child Assessment Team, also known as RCAT. Describe where and what RCAT is all about. Paint us a picture. What would a child see when they walk through the doors of the center?
Sure, no problem. It's really the multidisciplinary team across this county that responds to allegations of child abuse, to investigate them, but also to respond to them. So we say we're the RCAT center because we're the place where that team comes together to help children in this investigation time and also to provide a good response to them. Working as a team across the county with law enforcement partners, district attorney, victim services agencies, Children's Services Division, our medical team, our forensic interviewing team, and our clinical therapist team. So all of these people that can respond to and help navigate a child and a family through child abuse allegations are there.
Do you know about how many children you see every year?
We had 1,650 children come through our center in 2023.
So those 1,650 cases, are those kids who are physically harmed, serious injury, sexual abuse? I mean, is this kind of, you know, what maybe we would say, for lack of a better phrase, in the public, the worst of the worst situations?
Yes.
So what does it look like when the child walks through the door, when they go into one of these rooms and these interviews take place? Paint us that picture.
So one of our standards is that we are a child-friendly, safe environment. So when you walk in through our doors, it doesn't look like a police station. It doesn't look like a hospital. It looks like a child-friendly office with colorful walls and nice artwork and just friendly-looking, playing toys, video playing, that sort of thing. So it's a comforting lobby that they just enter into. And then all of our staff are trained in trauma-informed practices, just how to approach folks. What's really nice about our Child Advocacy Center is that, as opposed to a parent who's in their own crisis if something like this happens, then the child in crisis and experiencing trauma, instead of running to a police station, having to go to a CPS office or wait for a CPS worker to show up, to go find therapy to talk about what's going on, to maybe then be sent off to a medical evaluation or have to come back somewhere else to get a forensic interview, they come to this one place and all of those systems come together for the child in one place. So it's like a one-stop shop where everything can happen at once, instead of them having to wait and navigate all these multiple systems one by one by one.
And then potentially relive the trauma.
Of course, the more times a child has to tell this story to every individual, every professional, it is another recount of a traumatic time. It also sets that child up for having some differences in their statements, which then could be used against them later, even though it's really just the way memory is impacted by trauma. But we understand that, so we're able to help them navigate that without putting them in a position, setting them up for failure, if you will.
Jennifer, I want to bring you in. My understanding is you two know each other pretty well.
But... Oh, yeah. Very well. Yes.
talk to us a little bit about your work at Children's Services and how it intersects with Crystal's work at RCAP.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, Children's Services Division receives about 72,000 or so calls into our child abuse hotline each year. A large portion of those are investigated and some are referred to other agencies for information and referrals. The majority of our investigations are helping the family identify, you know, what safety would look like, wrapping them with their support systems. During that portion of investigations, when child abuse has occurred, our best resource is our RCAT center, because as Crystal described, it's the place where it's kind of the hub where all of the agencies work together.
So DPSS social workers will team up. They're among the partners with law enforcement, doctors, and others who are at RCAT. Would that be accurate to say?
Correct. It's a multidisciplinary team process where everybody shares information so that everybody at the table who is there really for a different purpose has the information that they need so that it's a thorough investigation and so that the family really has their needs addressed in the best way.
And the cases that are going to come to us, of course, are not all of those thousands and thousands of investigations that CSD conducts each year. Really, the more severe cases where there needs to be that collection of that evidence for multiple purposes. So severe physical abuse with injury and sexual abuse are the cases that really come to our center.
Yeah, I was going to ask about how does a child actually arrive at the center? And explain how they're treated and what trauma-informed care means, because we hear that a lot, but we might not really know what that actually means.
You know, it's become a buzzword, right? But either of them will call us and say, I think this child needs an exam, or I want this child to be able to get a forensic interview. And we have a protocol in this county for those joint investigations so that the evidence is collected in such a sound and defensible manner, not enter the RCAT center. The trauma-informed comes through the setting, like I had mentioned before, that comfortable, non-threatening setting. It comes through us not allowing any perpetrators in our center, so only non-offending caregivers or any substitute care providers can come in. The child, given choice and voice during their time with us, they're never forced to do anything they don't want to do. If they say, I am not talking to you today, we're not going to force them to do anything. We understand that trauma takes forms in many ways. You know, it can look like crying hysterically, it can look stoic, it can look anywhere in between. And when children are ready, that's when we're there for them.
Talk to us about some of those services. Physical, behavioral health, mental health. Can you get into that a little bit?
Jennifer can definitely talk about the array of services that Children's Services Division ends up working through families with. At our center, we really are focused on a medical evaluation if necessary, a forensic interview if necessary, and then the clinical therapeutic service of behavioral health. Or it could be a new one where currently our therapists are being trained in a shorter term child and family traumatic stress treatment. And then it could be referral out to a clinic nearer to them to get the appropriate modality of behavioral health therapy.
Jennifer, anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, as Crystal mentioned, after the therapeutic services for the child, if we have adjudicated the case and the family's working with Children's Services Division for a period of time, the services that the family is involved with really are designed to address the needs that brought them to the attention of the division. So that can include parenting classes, substance abuse treatment, sometimes therapy for the parents, any specialized services, but really they should be designed to meet the family's needs. And the family should really be a part of that engagement should happen between the social worker and the family to help design what that case plan should be, because the family is really the best expert in their own needs. But then the case plan itself is ordered by the court, and then that becomes for a period of time between the time the case is adjudicated and the 6-month review period. That's a time for the family to engage in services, the parents and the children. And that can look like the children can be in out-of-home care during that time if they're not able to remain with the parents, or they can remain with the parents in a supervised case. And so obviously the most important goal is always to keep children with families or to reunify as fast as possible. And then when they can't be with their families, to have them look for relatives, any relatives or kin support that could provide, that supportive period until the family is able to come together in a safe way.
I have a question. I know you've been mentioning adjudicated. What does that mean exactly?
That's a good question. Adjudicated means that the services are court ordered versus voluntary.
What would you like the public to know about what happens at the center in case they've never heard of it? And what should they know about what happens there?
So the RCAT Center is not something everyone will ever need. And we don't just take in walk-in customers. It's referred by law enforcement or child welfare services. But if you or your family had to come to the center, what you would want to know is that it's a place of comfort. It's a place where you'll be believed. You'll be listened to. Some of your worries can be explained. And what we always say, our motto kind of in-house is, when that family walks out of our doors, they feel just a little better than they walked in. We're not going to cure it. We're not going to make all of their worries go away, but we're going to give them that springboard. People are so resilient. It's a human gift we have, this resilience. But we know that resilience is more possible when you're supported, when you're believed, when you have that support system around you, and when you feel like you understand what's happening, and given some of those tools and able to pick those up. So when someone comes through our center, that's what we're hoping to provide, is a springboard towards that resilience, because they're going to be heard, believed, treated politely, kindly, with compassion, given information and referrals, but also education about what to expect next. They'll also be able to connect with those other people in the team that are there to investigate and provide other types of services as each agency is charged with. And by the time they leave there, they have fewer questions, fewer worries, fewer just cloud around them. We're getting involved after something has happened. But what we want to prevent is future harm to that child. Prevent the ongoing cloud that surrounds them because it's not gone treated or not gone paid attention to, that they are breaking the cycle by acknowledging and finding out what happened and then hitting it head on and working through that. We know that that breaks the cycle, and that's what's so important. That's why we count on our community members to direct these issues towards the attention of the agencies that are here to help families through these things and bring them to an agency such as RCAT Center, where we can continue that work.
And we want to let our podcast listeners know that if they're listening here and they suspect that there is child abuse or neglect taking place, there's a 24/7 hotline that's available. That number is 1-800-442-4918, and you will remain anonymous. What would you like the public to know about making a report?
Well, child abuse awareness and prevention is really everyone's responsibility. And community action can really result in positive change. So I think it's important to remember that anyone in the public, whether they're a mandated reporter or a neighbor or a family member, there's this unknown. You don't have to be concerned with being sure of what's happening. It's about concern. If you are concerned because you believe something may be happening or a child's health and safety are at risk, then it's important to report that and enable that investigation to be able to take place. And as you mentioned, the reporting party can remain anonymous. And it's important to feel like children's voices are represented by everyone. Children talk to people they feel comfortable with. So it's not always those that work closely with children that may be the person that a child, feels comfortable disclosing to. So really anybody who has information and really believes that a child's safety may be in danger.
It might not be something the child says. It could be something you observe, a change in the child's outward appearance, a change in their behavior, concern for the look of their health. It's a see something, say something. It's a hear something, say something. And to Jen's point, both her and I, prior to these jobs we have now, we were both child welfare workers for many years. We have a lot of experience. And my favorite part of this very tough job, because we work all year to prevent child abuse and to respond to it, but my very favorite parts of the job for 20 plus year career has been really meeting families where they're at, hearing what's happening, hearing how they can have help to get out of that place, and then bridging them together with it, all with compassion, with sitting and talking to them respectfully And when a family who maybe doesn't know better or is struggling through a trauma of their own, there's a lot of parents that never had their own traumas dealt with when they were little, and they don't know how to break that cycle. But when you can sit with someone and talk to them eye to eye and listen to them wholeheartedly and genuinely care, we have a lot of resources we can provide. And that's where the magic happens. When you can help a family ameliorate the issues that have brought any concern to hand in the first place. And so we want the community to know this is not a baby snatching event. This is not a, oh, I'm going to probably rip apart a family if I call. The vast majority of investigations are resulted in services being provided, families staying together, or getting back together in a safer way.
You went through as a teacher, Angela, you know, some of these very concerns of, you know, if you suspected abuse or neglect, how do I take action? Literally some of the things, Crystal, that you're talking about. How do you know you're going to remain anonymous? Because I think that that's something that could be scary for people.
Well, so a mandated reporter in the state of California, they don't remain anonymous. As a mandated reporter, you do state your name and you do make those reports. But it is the agency's utmost honor and privilege to keep that information confidential. We need those mandated reporters. That's the vast majority of the abuse calls that come through the hotline. And I would say that teachers are the majority of the mandated reporters that call. They spend days with students. They know them from last year to this. They know them before break to after break. They see behavior changes or changes in appearance or changes in mood and affect. So teachers are vital to these children's lives. Sometimes the person they spend the most time with is a teacher. So they're vital. For as far as neighbors or concerned citizens or family members, they have the right to remain anonymous if they're not a mandated reporter. But it's so helpful to the agency if people will tell us who they are, because they might be a big resource as the investigation goes on. They might be a primary support person as that family looks for ways to be safe without a government agency in their lives. So I think we do try to ask, you know, if they're willing to come forward with their name. Again, their information will not be given to the family as the reporter, but they can be contacted then by the agency as they try to build different plans.
For follow-up.
Yeah. And also to that point as well, if not you, then who? It's a child that may not have anyone else that lays eyes on them or anyone else that will call. And if everyone assumes someone else will call, what if no one calls? It's that one child's safety that is at stake. And right now, that's all that matters is that child. And so it's so important for us as a community. Those children grow up to be our workforce. Those children grow up to be our adults. Those children grow up to be your neighbors, your community. So it is everyone's job to see something, say something, to provide that possible help when needed. Most of the time, our children don't have a place to be able to do that without us helping them.
And Jennifer, Crystal had mentioned a little bit about some of the warning signs of abuse, changes in behavior, for example, you know, anything that you notice physically, but anything else that you wanted to add to that? Like, what can we look for as just people from the public who want to be vigilant and do the right thing and look out for the well-being of our children?
Right. You know, some of the things you look for are, as mentioned, the things that you may visibly observe with a child, but also the family dynamics. So if there's a concern about the family household and the situation and whatever that looks like, there may be concern about people having, you know, access and coming and going. That can look very different to neighbors. Typically know your schedule and know your home and your family members, and know those that you surround yourself with. So it can really be anything from a parent's inability to properly supervise, you know, a child, or concern about people having access to a child that may put them at risk for whatever reason. It's really any change in the child or the family household or dynamics. And it may not rise to the level of an in-person child abuse or neglect response investigation. And it may just be services are provided to the family from our prevention services team, or just education provided to the caller.
Great. So you should call. If you have any doubt in your mind, just call and take that first step. Well, thank you very much for your insights. That was a great conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, while April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, like I said before, the Child protective professionals are working year-round to do this work. We're passionate. I don't think you can be in this business without caring about it an awful lot because it's not an easy job. But Jennifer and I both have been doing it for a number of years, just like many of our colleagues, because it just really means a lot to us. And we're privileged to be able to help and respond. And we just want our community to also feel that privilege and join us in being aware, providing support to family and friends, being a supportive person. It's really hard to parent. Parenting is really one of the, I always said it's the hardest, it's the best and worst thing I ever did. It's really hard, but it's wonderful, but you can't do it alone. Nobody can do anything alone. All of us, anything we do, we really do require support. So do parents, so do the children in our community. So please join us in keeping your eyes out and offering assistance whenever you can.
Right. And everybody has the opportunity to make a positive impact. And we can do that through education and awareness and vigilance. With that, we can do great things.
So once again, if you suspect a child or youth is being abused or neglected in Riverside County, please call the 24-hour hotline. It's 1-800-442-4918. It's available 24/7. If you're not a mandated reporter, you can choose to remain anonymous. But regardless, reporting party information remains confidential and is protected by the law.
This concludes this episode of The Service Station, brought to you by the Riverside County Department of Public Social Services. You can find this episode and previous ones, both in English and Spanish, on all major podcast platforms. Also, check out our social media channels for the latest information about the department at RivcoDPSS. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we hope you listen in again next time.